Key Economic Releases Affecting Fixed Income Yields. Insights into Sectors Influencing Fixed Income Securities. How AAM plans to capitalize on these themes for your fixed income portfolio. The Portfolio Fix is a podcast series featuring members of AAM's investment and portfolio management team. We will discuss the timely issues affecting the fixed income investments of our insurance clients.
Welcome to another episode of the Portfolio Fix, a podcast series from AAM. My name is Patrick McGeever, and I'm a member of AAM's investment team. Today, Marco Bravo will interpret the Fed's decision on raising rates by 25 basis points. And then I'll spend a few minutes to discuss how the recent volatility in the energy markets is influencing economic growth and what changes we are making in our energy investment decisions. So with that out of the way, let's start with the Fed, Marco. They find themselves in a difficult position here. What did you make of today's decision, and what did you take away from Chairman Powell's comments?
Thanks, Pat. And as you mentioned, the Fed raised rates by 25 basis points following today's meeting, which was widely expected from the market. There were a few out there that thought 50 basis points may have been in the cards, but we think with the uncertainty surrounding the Russia-Ukraine crisis and the potential impact on growth, it was not surprising that the Fed raised rates by only 25 basis points. I think the key takeaway from the meeting is the Fed appears to be taking a more aggressive stance in targeting inflation and attempting to get inflation back down towards its 2% target level. And the Fed is kind of has to walk a tight line. They need to be aggressive to get inflation down, but can't get too aggressive and risk putting the U.S. economy into a recession. So from the statement, you know, the key message from the statements that I took was that obviously the Fed feels inflation is elevated. They view the supply demand imbalances that remain due to the pandemic, the rise in oil prices as key contributors to inflation. They want to return it to a 2% target, and they expect to begin reducing their balance sheet at an upcoming meeting this year. I think what took the market a little bit by surprise was how aggressive the changes in their dot plots were, such that the median dot now, which represents the median forecast by a Fed official, is now implying six more rate hikes this year. So basically a rate hike at each Fed meeting, which would bring the Fed funds rate at the end of this year to a range of 1.75 to 2%. If you compare that to the dot plot following the December meeting, that's four additional rate hikes that is being projected today versus back in December. And then also kind of surprising was that in 2023 and 2024, the federal funds rate moves above what the Fed officials believe is the long-term neutral rate. So I think it's indicative that the Fed needs to get aggressive, or they feel they need to get aggressive to begin to bring the inflation rate lower. They also updated their summary of economic projections. And again, relative to December, the Fed now is projecting lower economic growth for 2022. So they're projecting GDP growth of 2.8% versus 4% in December. And they're also projecting higher inflation, the PCE price index, which is their preferred measure of inflation, they're now projecting it to end the year at 4.3%. Back in December, they were projecting 2.6. So weaker growth, higher inflation were the big changes from in terms of their economic projections. It's interesting, market reaction immediately following the announcement was negative. Stocks that had been up, you know, fell, and we saw a significant rise in treasury yields and a flattening, a further flattening of the yield curve. But then Chairman Powell began to speak, and he said a few things that calmed the markets a little bit. One, that he feels that the probability of a recession in the next 12 months is very low, because in his opinion, the U.S. economy is in very strong position and could withstand tighter monetary policy. They do think that inflation will begin to come down in the second half of this year. And so his words were soothing, is the word I would use, to the market, and that the Fed's going to be flexible. He used the term that every meeting is live. And so with respect to future rate hikes, that they'll be flexible. And he also mentioned balance sheet reduction. We should get more details when the minutes of today's meeting are released.
Okay. You know, Marco, I think the Fed's press release was probably as hawkish as we've seen in some time. But you're right. Chairman Powell's words were calming to the market. I thought the moves on their inflation and growth expectations were interesting. I was wondering what your thoughts were on that. How does AAM's views on the risks to growth and inflation compare with the Fed's?
I think they're fairly comparable. So with respect to GDP growth, we view that the downside risks have increased here recently, largely due to rising commodity prices, resulting in less disposable income for consumers. The downturn in equity valuations hurting consumer confidence, and the rise in the U.S. dollar potentially hurting U.S. exports. Offsetting those downside risks, though, are, you know, consumer fundamentals still remain very strong. Consumers are flush with cash. Balance sheets are strong. You can say the same about corporations. Balance sheets are strong. We're still expecting, you know, 8 to 10% increase in EBITDA this year. So our stance remains that risks are balanced, but downside risks have definitely increased here recently. On the inflation front, you know, if you look at headline inflation, the CPI index last month was up 7.9% year over year. It's a 40-year high. The same could be said for the PCE price index, which was up 6.1%. Inflation is expected to come down. The consensus has inflation kind of in the low to mid 3% by the end of the year. We think inflation ends the year higher, and that's largely due to the fact that the supply issues, the supply chain disruptions are going to linger. And now you're seeing shutdowns in parts of China due to COVID, which potentially makes the supply disruptions even worse.
Yep.
So that's kind of in line with kind of the updated projections from the Fed today, weaker growth and higher inflation.
Okay, Marco, you mentioned one of the headwinds to economic growth is higher commodity prices. So maybe we switch seats here and you take over the mic and ask me questions about the energy market.
So one of the concerns with respect to growth from higher oil prices is, consumers will have less disposable income to spend on other goods. There is the thought that with higher oil prices comes potentially increased investment from energy companies to help offset some of that reduced consumption. But so far, we really haven't seen a significant expansion in terms of investment from energy companies. Perhaps, Pat, you can kind of shed some light onto why or what's happening within the energy space.
Sure. So as it relates to capital spending by the companies in the energy space, over the past 10 years, they've dramatically underperformed the equity market by something like 300%. And so they have to be very responsive to their shareholders' requests. And over the past year, year and a half, the overarching request has been, we want cash flows returned to shareholders. We want you to withhold growth and increase dividends and share buybacks. And so in order to be responsive to the shareholders and get their equity to perform even close to what the S&P 500 has done, they're going to curtail capital spending or at least just keep it flat. And as a result, you're not going to see increased production, not nearly as much as the administration wants right now. I do want to say, this really is not your father's energy market. You mentioned how oil influences discretionary income. 25, 30 years ago, approximately 8% of household income was spent on transportation fuels, gasoline, diesel, airplane tickets. Now that's closer to 2%. And so the U.S. has become much less dependent on oil. And I'd even say that 25 years ago, 30 years ago, we needed one barrel to generate approximately $1,000 of GDP. Now the world needs less than half a barrel to generate $1,000 of GDP. So we've just become much less dependent on oil for economic growth than we have in the past. And as a rule of thumb, I'd say that for every $10 increase in oil, GDP is reduced by 0.1%. So given that we've had a $30 move here over the past 2 or 3 months, that probably takes away 0.3% of GDP growth in 2022.
As you know, the administration, one way it is attempting to punish Russia is by no longer purchasing their oil. I believe Russian oil exports to the U.S. made up about 3% of the oil consumed here in the U.S., if I'm not mistaken. Which isn't a lot, but still, it's not zero. So how does the, you know, you can U.S. companies or others kind of fill that supply gap?
It's a very interesting question. Could we overcome the supply gap from Russian supplies? Most certainly, but the bigger deal is that the rest of the world uses Russian crude far more than we do. Overall, Russia exports about 5 million barrels per day. And in fact, when there was talk about banning all Russian exports, that caused oil prices to spike to $125 per barrel. Since then, it seems as though that threat of everybody stopping from buying Russian crude might not be there. And so we probably don't have to replace the entire 5 million barrels per day. But I think there's a good chance we're going to have to replace at least 3 million barrels per day. And where that is going to come from is the big challenge. OPEC Plus might be able to increase supply by 2 million barrels per day. The Strategic Petroleum Reserve certainly is not a long-term solution to replace it. Removing sanctions from Iran and Venezuela, those are more intermediate-term solutions. So we could be, the world could be in a supply shortfall of 1 million barrels per day for the remainder of 2022. The U.S., given the amount of supply we have here in the U.S. domestically, we probably won't be hurt as much as most other parts of the world.
So we could see oil prices continue to remain elevated based on that shortfall. And, you know, a lot of attention has been kind of placed on oil prices, but and less attention on what's happening with gas prices, natural gas prices in Europe, and, you know, particularly countries like Germany. Maybe you could provide some details on what's going on there and the implications.
Sure. So, and you're exactly right. I think natural gas is a much bigger issue in Europe. Let you know, natural gas is used for many things: heating homes, providing fuel to generate electricity. It's used in thermal industries like aluminum smelters. It's a feedstock for chemicals that make fertilizer. So it's an absolutely critical commodity. And unfortunately, prices in Europe have skyrocketed. As of today, natural gas is about $35 per million British thermal units. That's about seven times higher than here in the United States. So if you think your gas bill or electric bill is high, it's nothing compared to what the Europeans are going through. So, and this has been an issue that's been building for the past three quarters in Europe. They are heavily reliant on renewable energy, and that renewable energy was not sufficient over the past several quarters to meet electric demand. And so they then started to use more natural gas than they had expected for electrical needs. As a result, their natural gas inventory is well below where it should be at this time of year. And then over the past quarter, Russia has been curtailing flows, natural gas flows into Europe, and Europe depends on between 30 and 40% of their supply on Russian supply. So Europe depends on 30 to 40% of their demand on Russian supplies. So that is definitely hurt. Most recently, the spike has been the threat of Russia just cutting off natural gas supply. And that's something that's an issue that is incredibly troubling and could not easily be solved in the near term.
So with oil and commodity prices elevated, Pat, you would think that is a positive for energy companies. What are you recommending to portfolio managers these days?
Yeah, you're exactly right. The fundamentals for oil and gas companies probably have never been stronger. But that's reflected in the prices of their bonds relative to industrials. By our measure, energy bonds are anywhere between 1 to 2 standard deviations more expensive than average relative to their industrial peers. And we've gone back and looked at periods of oil price spikes and then the inevitable collapse in prices. And what we've seen is the energy sector tends to underperform industrials by anywhere from 20 basis points to 100 basis points within 1 to 2 quarters of that oil price spike. So we've been recommending to portfolio managers with a total return mandate to start reducing their energy exposure. But for those clients that have an income focus, we've recommended that they maintain their energy exposure simply because the fundamentals are strong enough that these companies are going to continue to perform well and meet their principal and interest obligations. It's just a matter of, will they outperform industrials? And we just don't think so at this point.
Thanks, Pat. That's some great insights into the energy sector.
Sure. Well, we probably took more time than we usually do here, Marco, so we should wrap things up. I want to thank you for your thoughts on the economy and for the discussion we had on the energy sector. I also want to thank you, the listener, for taking the time to listen to our podcast. If you have any questions, please reach out to your portfolio manager or our marketing team at aamcompany.com. During our next podcast, I'll be joined by Marco and a member of our investment team to discuss a timely issue affecting the fixed income markets. Thank you.